T-Mobile has an exclusive bundle for customers 55 and up.
I'm Sarah Bowl.
Yeah, I'm Frank Bowl.
A reliable network is key for us. And with T-Mobile, it's been wonderful. And going to the 55 plus plan saved us so much money.
A lot.
And that's important. Trying to keep costs down. The home internet's been perfect. It's fast. It's quick. The setup was so easy. It took less than 15 minutes.
It was like, ta-da! If you want simplicity, coverage, reliability, you want the whole package, T-Mobile has it.
Right now, T-Mobile customers 55 and up can get two phone lines on America's best network, plus America's fastest 5G home internet for just $30 each.
$30 per month each line with auto pay plus taxes and fees. Minimum age 55. Pricing for home internet rely on 2 lines of Essentials Choice 55. $35 connection charge per line required. Best mobile network and fastest 5G home internet based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
When it comes to my policy, Farmers gives it to me straight, so there's no surprises.
It's your coverage. You should never be confused.
You hear that? An insurance provider with a conscience.
We're a choir, but yes, we have that too.
Straightforward coverage you can literally understand. That's what you get when
you have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
Cuts in on the right foot, launches a golazo!
It's time for Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Tune in as Jason Longshore gives you insight and analysis on the beautiful game, including headlines from around the world of soccer.
Rebound, goal!
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight, brought to you by your local Ford dealer and brought to you in part by Michelob Ultra, official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26.
Atlanta Soccer Tonight is on Sports Radio 92.9, The Game. Here's Jason Longshore.
Let's kick it. Atlanta Soccer Tonight is live 2 hours on a Monday. And it's a massive week sitting right in front of us. It starts tomorrow with the first World Cup semifinal in Dallas, 3 o'clock kick, France and Spain. And then Wednesday, 3 o'clock, Argentina and England here in Atlanta. If you are an English fan and you're stumbling onto the show, yes, that was the Muchachos song. That was Argentina's theme song of the 2022 World Cup. Yes, I am an Argentina fan since I fell in love with the game in 1986. It's a big week. It's a big week across the board. It's a big week when you find out that your credential requests go through and you'll be in the building on Wednesday. It's a big week when you have Lionel Messi playing the one major opponent that he has never played, England. Last time these two teams played was 2005, and Messi was not able to play in that match. It's been a long time, and all of that time has only intensified the talk around this game, and we're not even in the same day yet. We're not even close. We're not even 24 hours away, and the talk is starting to get pretty intense. The talk between France and Spain is a little bit different. We'll talk about all that as we go today. Atlanta United announced a big signing, a World Cup veteran. We'll talk about that. We'll talk about Major League Soccer and their launch of the biggest marketing campaign in league history. And this is what a lot of people were asking for, and now a lot of people are finding something to complain about.
It's what we do, right? It's American soccer. We complain about stuff. We don't try to do too much of that here on AST. We try to give you lots of different stories. We give you the 3-4-3 to close out the night. Local, national, international, and smile stories. Things that make us smile about this game. And there's so much that makes us smile about this game right now, even if we are a little bit nervous about these semifinals. Let's talk about tomorrow, 3 o'clock Eastern, AT&T Stadium or Dallas Stadium. That's the title for the summer. France is chasing some history. Spain is the one team that has had their number as of late on a regular basis. Argentina beat them in the World Cup final in 22, but Spain has beaten them two of their last three times and back-to-back here in big matches, including semifinals. We will see if France can find a way to do this, but here's what's at stake tomorrow. Besides just getting to the World Cup final, which is enough, France, if they win and they get to the World Cup final, it would be their fifth final in eight major tournaments. That's crazy. It would make them the first team since Brazil in 1994, 1998, and 2002 to reach three straight World Cup finals. Brazil won here in the U.S. in 94. They lost the final to France in 98 in France, and then they won their last World Cup in 2002 in Japan and South Korea. But it's been Spain that has been the team that's had France blocked at their last two runs at major silverware. Spain beat them in the Euro 2024 semifinal 2-1. Spain went on to win that tournament. And Spain edged them in a crazy 5-4 Nations League semifinal last year. So let's go back to that Euro 2024 semifinal in Munich. Seven players that started that match could take the field again on Tuesday for France, but it's not the same team even with 7 of 11. Randall Kolo Muani's early header was not enough that night. Spain came back and scored twice to win it. Kylian Mbappe was playing with a broken nose at that point. This version of France has Mbappe, the dictator, allegedly, and Ousmane Dembele, who might be his sergeant, I'm not sure, although Michael Olise might be the one who is taking that role on. Olise has been controlling games kind of between the lines, on the dribble, opening things up. Dembele and Mbappe have combined for 13 goals in this tournament. Bradley Barcola and Désiré Doué have added a lot of scoring punch on the opposite side, and they've kind of swapped in and out. This is the first time that France and Spain have met at a World Cup since 2006. France eliminated Spain 3-1 in that one. Zinedine Zidane scored the clinching goal late. That was his last World Cup. France went all the way to the final where they lost to Italy. Let's talk about France. Let's get caught up on some news around Les Bleus. Mbappe, in that game against Morocco, he did take a kick to the ankle. He was subbed in the second half kind of late. He had an ice pack on his ankle, but then he demanded the captain's armband for the celebrations and led the celebrations and looked pretty spry on the ankle, so he was fine. L'Equipe is reporting that he's dealing with some minor pain. He's received treatment. He has had a little bit of a lightened training session today. He's the dictator. He can do what he wants, right? Didier Deschamps, the manager, was asked if his captain is 100%. Deschamps said, "You can't go beyond 100%, so yes, he is 100%. He is starting. There was never a question. Aurélien Tchouaméni, he is back in the squad after missing the last two matches. Now, he's had an adductor issue. Deschamps called him available, and he said that's the most important thing. Gave him a pretty good chance to start this match in that holding midfield. The lingering question, I mentioned Doué and Barcola, the left side. Deschamps wouldn't tip his hand. He said both are starting level guys, and that whoever starts, whoever comes off the bench, both need to be good because both will be needed. Doué, according to L'Equipe and some other French experts, they think Doué is going to get the slight edge. For me, Doué is a little bit more of the dribbler of the two and can break things down. I think Barcola is a little bit more of the runner in behind. And I think against Spain and what they bring to the table, Doué might be the better one to start. Maybe make something out of nothing off of the dribble And then Barcola comes in against maybe a little bit more tired Spain team and can exploit getting in behind them with a little more vertical play. Spain hasn't been shy coming into this game. And I would agree with pretty much everybody who has said this, that France has been the best team in the tournament up to this point. But Spain's not afraid of them, maybe because they've had success against them as of late. Lamine Yamal, after beating Belgium in the quarterfinal, he talked about that. He said, if France should fear anybody, it's Spain. Nico Williams was on El Chiringuito, the famous TV show in Spain, and he said Spain's already proven that it's got nothing to fear because they've beaten this France team twice. He said it's confidence. He said it's a bit of ego. He said it's not arrogance, it's confidence. Pau Cubarsí, the teenage center back from Barcelona, he was asked about Kylian Mbappe, and he said that he doesn't scare him. He acknowledged Mbappe's ability and said that he can ruin your day in one moment, but he's not afraid. The French have really stayed out of it. They haven't said very much. Deschamps has set that tone from the very beginning of the tournament. He said Spain was the favorite coming in. He says Spain's the favorite now. Most managers will do this. Very few managers will step up and say, no, we're the favorite. We're going to win. Yes. Most of them like to try to deflect and put it the other way. But Deschamps done this from the beginning, so you give him credit for that. Adrien Rabiot, the midfielder, who likely will be paired up with Tchouaméni, he said that what makes him think that France will beat Spain this time around, he doesn't know. And he kind of, again, deflected and said that Spain is the favorite here. And he's got to see something that his team hasn't shown yet. I think that's an interesting line. And again, I think Rabiot's trying to play the game in the media, and I get it, but for me, France is the least tested of the four semifinalists. That's not their fault. It's the teams that they've played and the teams that have lined up against them. I mean, Norway could have been a big test for them, but Norway rotated everybody in that last group stage game. They didn't play a full-strength team. The other two games in the group stage, Senegal was a very comfortable second half after a slow start. Iraq wasn't a test at all. Paraguay became a bit of a test because of how they sat back and how they tried to get under France's skin, and France passed that test. But Paraguay is not Spain. And Morocco wasn't at the level that they were at the last tournament. Sweden didn't put up a fight in the knockout round. So the Paraguay game is really the only close game that France has played. And a lot of people were a little concerned coming out of that. I give Paraguay credit for making it that way more than I think France was bad. But how does France handle being truly tested by a team like Spain? Ibrahima Konate, the defender for France, and France has been really good defensively as well. He said that they don't listen to the outside noise. They stay away from that trap, especially at this stage. This is a team who's been here plenty. The other big storyline that's come out of this is a controversy that neither team has asked for. It's been some of the external folks around it. Former Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy, he wrote in a column ahead of the match that the French team doesn't have many French players, really taking a shot at the diversity of this French team. And that drew swift condemnation from everybody concerned in both countries and players. Pau Cubarsí, again, a teenager who is in this position for Spain, he pushed back on it just in the simplest way. He's like, it doesn't matter the color of their skin. They're wearing the French shirt. They are French. And he talked about the tolerance and respect, and he said that should not be up for debate by anyone. That luckily has been, these comments have been pushed to the side by everybody concerned, thankfully. The referee is a topic of conversation. It is somebody that we have seen in CONCACAF, Yvon Barton. He's got the whistle, his fourth match of this tournament. He had the Turkey-Paraguay match. He had the Japan-Sweden match in the group. He had Switzerland-Colombia in the round of 16. Really no major incidents in any of those. He was named the best referee of the round of 16 for how he handled that Switzerland-Colombia game. He got some headlines for using the mouth-covering red card for the first time on Miguel Almirón in that Paraguay-Turkey game. He's the most experienced Central American referee in World Cup history. He is a referee who's not afraid to make big decisions. And when you get to a World Cup semifinal, you're going to have big decisions to make, especially in a game like this where you've got two teams that know one another well. You've got two teams with one that's had control of the series as of late and the other one maybe a chip on their shoulder trying to get over that hump. Barton is the kind of guy who can handle it. Now, no referee comes in and has the ability to have a perfect match. Every referee is going to have something that happens in a game. Every game like this is going to be separated by the thinnest of margins. Barton is a good shout for this game, in my opinion. He's also refereed a France-Spain game before, the 2019 U17 World Cup. There's your little bit of trivia tonight. All right, when we come back on the other side of the break, we'll get into the tactics a little bit. We'll talk about Spain's fullbacks, why they are so important in this match. We'll talk about the Spanish midfield that has evolved as the tournament has gone on. And we'll talk about the super sub, Mikel Merino, and a stat that should terrify France and anybody else left in this tournament. More Atlanta Soccer tonight, coming up on the other side of the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Baseball has always been a game of inches. Now, it's also a game of seconds. T-Mobile and MLB have teamed up to bring ABS Challenge to all 29 ballparks across the U.S. This isn't a minor upgrade. This is the most significant new technology in the history of the sport, and it's powered by T-Mobile. With every pitch thrown, ABS Challenge uses real-time precision to verify the call, giving them the support they need. No delays, no guesswork, just accuracy at the speed the game demands. Thanks to ABS Challenge, T-Mobile is helping power the moments that define the game. When performance and reliability are non-negotiable, MLB turns to T-Mobile. That's not a coincidence. That's what happens when the most innovative network in the country powers the most data-driven sport in the world. T-Mobile powers MLB's most ambitious technology, and America's best network powers your connection to baseball, home or away, every pitch, every game, every day. T-Mobile, it's better over here.
Major League Baseball trademarks and copyrights are used with permission of Major League Baseball. Visit MLB.com. T-Mobile, best mobile network in the U.S. According to Ookla speed test, based on analysis by Ookla of speed test intelligence data, first half 2026. Ookla trademarks used under license and reprinted with permission.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
When it comes to my policy, Farmers gives it to me straight, so there's no surprises.
It's your coverage. You should never be confused.
You hear that? An insurance provider with a conscience.
We're a choir, but yes, we have that too.
Straightforward coverage you can literally understand. That's what you get when
you have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
If you're the type of person who wants data, not assumptions, Prenuvo's whole body scan gives you a deep understanding of your health. Screen for over 500 conditions, including many cancers, autoimmune disorders, neurodegenerative diseases, and more. Add blood panels to test over 80 biomarkers, and you've got information about your body you may never have had before. Book your scan at Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
To more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back. Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. France and Spain tomorrow at 3, semifinal number 1. Let's break out the virtual chalkboard. Let's talk a little bit of tactics here. So if you're going to go watch this game, let me give you some talking points. Let me give you some things to watch for, and maybe you'll impress some people with some of these. Let's see what I can do for you. All right, number one, Spain. Per tactical analysis from L'Equipe, Spain has created more scoring chances via cutback passes. So your winger or your fullback take it to the end line and then cut it back in the box rather than just driving across in, rather than just whipping across in and hoping somebody gets on the end of it. A cut back low pass, usually to around the penalty spot. In a perfect world, if you get to the end line and you cut it back to the penalty spot 12 yards from goal, it's really difficult to defend. Spain has done this 13 times, more than anybody else left in the tournament. The way they typically do this is the fullbacks. So what happens is Lamine Yamal, Alex Baena, or other players on the wing, usually Yamal, sometimes Nico Williams on that opposite side when he's healthy enough to go, they come inside. They're inverted wingers. So Yamal especially, he likes to cut in from the right on his left foot. Think, if you're an Atlanta United fan, Alexi Maranchuk, who is a winger when he's playing wide to the right, but not staying super wide. He's coming inside. Because what that does is your fullback is able to overlap, get to the end line because you have somebody inside, so it's tough to defend. Defenders have to make a choice. Am I going to stay with the guy who's in the pocket around the top of the 18? Am I going to leave him for a quick short pass from the player overlapping? You always want to make defenders make decisions. So why this is important for Spain, they don't typically play with a traditional number nine. They play often with Mikel Oyarzabal, who is a converted winger, who isn't going to win a whole lot of aerial duels. He likes to drop into that spot around the penalty spot. Depending on which side the cross is coming from, the winger from the opposite side can often get to that spot. You create chaos with that when you do it well. And then what happens is if you do it well a few times, then you do have a more traditional cross. Think to the Spain game here in Atlanta against Saudi Arabia, where Spain was all over them early, went for the cutback a couple of times early, and then drove one across to the back post that Lamine Yamal scored the opening goal on. It creates a little bit of deception when you're able to do that often. And what happens, too, is with those cutbacks, a lot of times you get defenders trying to get to it running at their own goal, which you never want to be doing as a defender, having to make a play on the ball. How many times have we seen own goals in this tournament? It's those situations often where it is a cutback from the end line, defender running towards their own goal. They know they have to make a play, but you're trying to redirect that ball away from your own goal on the run running at it. It's really difficult to do. Let's go back to the Belgium game for Spain. The opening goal came directly from this kind of cutback. Yamal fed Pedro Porro, the right back, down the right side. Defense collapsed. Dani Olmo got a shot away off of the cutback. Fabian Ruiz buried the rebound. All right, here's the other side, France. No team in the tournament has scored more counterattack goals than France. They have three, all coming while they're already leading 1-0. It's been the second goal in the game against Senegal, the second goal against Norway, the second goal against Sweden. Belgium's performance against Spain in that quarterfinal, even though they lost, it showed that there is space to attack against Spain. Spain's been great defensively. They've only conceded one goal. But they're not doing that by defending deep. They're doing that by defending high up the field. They're doing that by having the ball. And we've seen Pau Cubarsí, Aymeric Laporte, we've seen the two center backs for Spain really high up the field. Well, when you have somebody like Kylian Mbappe, who is one of the fastest players in this tournament and times his runs very well, when you have Ousmane Dembélé, when you have Désiré Doué or Bradley Barcola, when you have Michael Olise, you have the kinds of players that can beat a high defensive line when the ball turns over. That's going to be an issue for Spain. They're going to want the ball. They're going to want numbers in the attacking half. They're going to want to be really pinning France in. But the inevitability is you're going to turn the ball over. No team ever passes at 100%. It's impossible. It's never happened in a match in the history of the sport. You're going to have a turnover, whether it is a forced error or an unforced error. What happens when you have the turnover? For Spain, you've got to immediately press the ball when you're that high up the field. Because against France, if you don't, if you get caught kind of halfway, France will open you up. They will carve you up with that. Now, the question is, can France do that and look for that opportunity without getting exposed themselves? Because this is the game within the game for me. If Spain controls the possession, which I think they will, and they're able to make Doué or Barcola, Dembélé, Olise, if they're able to make them defend, if those guys, their positioning, because Mbappe's not going to chase everybody around and defend all the time. He might at times, and this has been a recurring conversation at Real Madrid about Kylian Mbappe's lack of engagement defensively. If he doesn't stay at least somewhat engaged, then Cubarsí and Laporte are going to be able to do whatever they want with the ball. Everybody else is going to have to drop back and defend. That makes it harder to get out on the break. So it becomes that chess match, and it's one, where do you pin people? Can Spain, especially with Porro, with Cucurella, the two fullbacks, can they pin the French wingers deep? Okay, that takes away part of the counterattacking situation. But if France says, all right, we'll do that to take away your fullbacks with your cutbacks, but we're going to leave Mbappe high up the field, what are you going to do about that? That's going to affect Cubarsí, especially in terms of how high up the field he goes in possession. It's a chess match. It becomes really interesting in who maybe goes against type in that situation. Does France bet, you know what, we're going to leave Dembélé a little bit higher up the field. We don't think your fullback, Pedro Porro, can hurt us. We think we can handle him. We're going to leave Dembélé up. Are you going to be willing to take that chance? And you get into a staring contest. It's going to be so fascinating with the situation. Now, here's the other thing for Spain. Their midfield. We talked about it coming into the tournament. They have so much talent. I mean, it's absurd how many options they have in the midfield. You know Rodri's going to start. He's been great in this tournament. But who partners him? Dani Olmo has really taken the spot higher up the field. Fabian Ruiz, he was dropped after the draw with Cabo Verde in the opener. Pedri was moved back into his usual deeper role alongside Rodri. That worked against Saudi Arabia, that worked against Austria. Pedri struggled against Portugal, who has a great midfield as well. Vitinha, João Neves, Bruno Fernandes. So Fabian Ruiz comes into the team against Belgium, and he opened the scoring. So here's the new element to this that's making its way through the Spanish media. Luis de la Fuente talked to Spanish radio today, and he said Pedri can't play the same way that he plays for Barcelona because Rodri is a different kind of partner than what he has at Barcelona, so he's got to adjust. Rodri is the key man for the Spain team. Everything goes through him. So whoever's paired with him has to be more of a sidekick, more of a complementary piece. And Pedri isn't necessarily that. So it becomes an interesting battle. Fabian Ruiz, I think, because in the PSG midfield, Fabian Ruiz often is the complementary piece to Vitinha. So he can handle that a little bit more. I think you lose some elements with Fabian Ruiz versus Pedri. I think Pedri is the potentially more effective player here. Maybe the more dangerous player is the better way to put it. But Fabian Ruiz paired with Rodri might make you a little bit stronger. So I'm fascinated at that decision. But here's the other thing about Spain that France is going to have to be aware of. Mikel Merino. He's been the super sub in this tournament. And he's been the super sub really in general in terms of either coming off the bench or just being that guy late in games. Over the last three seasons for both club and country, Marino has scored 12 goals after the 80th minute, and 8 of those 12 changed the result. Over a third of his goals in that span have come after the 80th minute, the fourth highest rate in Europe's top 5 leagues among players with at least 30 goals. He's one of only 2 midfielders to be there alongside Jude Bellingham. In this tournament, he was decisive against Portugal in the first minute of stoppage time. He was decisive against Belgium in the 88th minute. And he scored those goals after only being on the field for a couple of minutes. When you have that ace in the hole, it gives you confidence. I always remember Italy early in the 1990 World Cup, and I think they honestly kind of messed themselves up a little bit with this. You had Toto Schillaci, who kind of came out of nowhere to get into the Italian team and then be the super sub and score goals late. And he did that so well that they felt like they had to start him. And then you lost the super sub, so you couldn't change the game late. Spain, because of all this depth in midfield, and give full credit to Mikel Merino, he has accepted, this is just what I am with this team. It hasn't affected him. He's not clamoring to start. He's not getting frustrated. He says, all right, I'm going to get 10 minutes. I'm going to make the most of my 10 minutes. And it's important to have that. It's important to have that weapon if you're Spain. Let's say France gets a goal. Let's say they get 2 goals. Merino comes into the game, you're immediately going to be like, oh man, here we go. This guy's good in these moments. That's going to be something in the back of the French minds. Alex Baena, who has been very good on the wing for Spain, he was asked directly about the framing of this match, which I would agree with. Spain will have the ball. France will be dangerous on the counter. Baena said Spain knows exactly how France plays, who their attackers are, how they thrive in transition. And Baena said that Spain's plan is to simply control the ball and limit turnovers. You can't change who you are at this point. You can tweak little things and you can alter elements of it, but you are who you are. And Spain can't turn into a deep defending team. They can't turn into a counterattacking team. They're a possession team. It's who they are. That's their DNA. Baena also downplayed a travel disparity story. Spain had one less day of rest, about 10 more hours of flight time than France. Baena said it's not an excuse. They'll be fine. Luis de la Fuente, he, the manager for Spain, he has consistently during this tournament had a lot of really interesting quotes, a lot of really fascinating ones. He has been a big time, I don't know, like he's really studied a lot of the Roman Empire and ancient Rome. He dropped a Julius Caesar quote on us today in the press conference. He said, there is no great achievement without suffering. And he said that his team is ready to suffer for this one. They're going to have to get past France, who has been the best team in the tournament so far. Didier Deschamps has been the best manager. He has managed Kylian Mbappe, who's not an easy guy to manage, and he's gotten the most out of him. Everything feels really good for France right now. But Spain, comfortable suffering, comfortable picking away, pinning you back, and ultimately breaking you down. That's what they've done so well in this tournament. Coming up next, let's shift it a little bit closer to home, shall we? Wednesday, right here, Lionel Messi finally gets to play England. We'll talk about what the early news is on semifinal number 2, Argentina and England on Wednesday. More AST coming up on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Soccer on the world stage, and Jason Longshore has it all covered.
With Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight, live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. Final week of the 2026 FIFA World Cup. It's kind of sad. This has been amazing. This whole sequence of matches and storylines and chaos and lack of sleep and amazing goals and yeah, controversy and underdogs and all the different things. This tournament has lived up to all of it. And you never know. Some World Cups aren't the same as others. This one has been everything so far. And it feels like with these semifinals, maybe the two best teams playing in the tournament in France and Spain on one side. And then one of the best rivalries in sports, period. Just no way around that. That's not hyperbole. That I'm not making anything up. I'm not overstating it because I'm an Argentina fan. Argentina-England is one of the biggest rivalries in sport in the world. It's a whole nother level. I know rivalry. I'm a Georgia fan. I feel like Georgia has more rivals than any other team. Every other game's a rivalry game on a fall Saturday afternoon. Rivals are different. And Argentina's got a bunch of rivals, too. Maybe that's why I'm an Argentina fan as well. Because I feel like Argentina, especially when you get into South American World Cup qualifying, they get these rivalry games that come up all the time. These games that have a little bit extra feeling. England is different all the way around. I talked about it last night. And if you've missed anything from the tournament and you want to get caught up, make sure you're subscribed to Off the Woodwork, our podcast of all of our soccer content here on 92.9 The Game. You can get it on the Odyssey app. You can get it wherever you get podcasts. Did a whole segment about the history between Argentina and England last night. And it's important to know before this match if you're new to it, if you've gotten sucked into this tournament, or you're neutral. Maybe you're not an Argentina or an England person and you're like, what's the big deal? It's just two really good teams. It's the defending champs. It's England. It's going to be big, right? Yeah, but there's more. One of the big stories is Lionel Messi's never played England. And you think of somebody like Diego Maradona, and he played England in one World Cup match and kind of defined his life in many ways. Messi's never played England. He's played Brazil a ton of times. He's played, obviously, all the South American teams, Uruguay, who's won two World Cups, Brazil, who's won five. He's played Germany, who's won multiple World Cups. He's played France, who's won multiple World Cups. He's played Italy in the Finalissima. He's played Spain. Every nation that has ever lifted a World Cup, Messi has played them except for England. That changes on Wednesday. The last time these teams met was 2005, a friendly in Switzerland. England won late on two Michael Owen headers. Messi was suspended for that match. It's crazy. He was 18 years old. He had just won the U20 World Cup with Argentina. He was just starting to establish himself at Barcelona. He got his first call-ups to the senior national team under Jose Pekerman. But his first senior national team match against Hungary, Messi comes on as a sub. He was sent off in less than a minute. Somebody was on his back, grabbing at him, trying to prevent him from breaking away. Messi slung his arm back. Referee said he punched the guy in the face and got a suspension. So he was with the squad for the England game, but he was not eligible to play. So he gets his first opportunity here. Flip side is nobody from England's played Messi. Nobody from England has played Argentina either. And when you think of how big this rivalry is, the fact that none of these guys have any history in it is interesting. Manchester City and England left back Nico O'Reilly, he called this a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity. He's never played Messi at the club level. And I do wonder, for England, does that factor in for some of these guys? Messi could very well be lined up against O'Reilly a good bit. We saw Messi against Egypt here in Atlanta, and we saw it a lot against Switzerland, float out to the right, which would be England's left, which would be against O'Reilly. Can O'Reilly not be starstruck in these moments? We'll see. So, just to reiterate, these teams have played 14 times, going back to 1962, where they played at the World Cup in Chile. England have had the edge in the series. But Argentina have the big moments in really any way you want to talk about it. Even in 66, when they lost in the quarterfinal at Wembley in London, everybody ends up talking about their captain, Antonio Ratin, who passed away on Saturday. They talk about him getting sent off, and the game was very, very physical. And this was before you had yellow cards and red cards. Ratin's sending off actually forced FIFA to create a yellow card and red card system. But Ratin didn't want to leave the field. There was also some miscommunication with misunderstandings due to language with a German referee. And England's manager, Sir Alf Ramsey, called Argentina and their players, called their players on the field that day, animals. 20 years later, they played in Mexico. Diego Maradona punched a ball into the back of the net and got credit for it. That tied the game. That gave the Argentina the 1-0 lead. And then Maradona scored the greatest goal in the history of the World Cup 4 minutes later. Crazy, crazy match. England cut one back. They lost 2-1. 98, Diego Simeone goads Beckham into acting out. Beckham lightly flicks his heel at him. Simeone falls down. The referee sends Beckham off. Argentina wins a shootout. David Beckham becomes a villain in England for 4 years. Then he gets his revenge in 2002, converting a penalty to beat Argentina in the group stage. All that stuff. Just to get into the history a little bit further, Argentina's two best wins against England, and this is important because, honestly, England's got more of the wins in the series, but the two biggest ones, 1986 and 1998, Argentina wore their alternate kit. According to reports out of Argentina, they requested to wear their alternate kit for this match, and that is what's going to happen. Argentina will be in their alternate, which is black and dark blue. It's not quite the same dark blue alternate that they wore that were both pretty similar, actually, 86 and 98. The 86 kit, the story is fascinating behind what Argentina wore that game, because they had played Uruguay in the round of 16. The tournament was in Mexico. It was extremely hot. And their clothing supplier was Le Coq Sportif. And the kit, the alternate kit, was thick and kind of heavy. And you know, they're sweating in it, and it got really heavy. And they didn't want to wear it for a game that was going to kick off, I think it kicked off at noon local time to be on in good TV time in England. So they sent their equipment guy out to the markets in Mexico City to find kits of a dark blue color. Like, you can't do these things these days. This happened in 1986. They had a couple of different options. They took them to Maradona. He picked the one that they wore. It's like a light mesh kind of jersey, not like the old school 80s American football mesh, but had little holes in it, so it was good for the heat. Deep V-neck on it. They put the old Argentina Federation crest on it, because that's really all they had to put on these. And then they needed numbers for it. And the only numbers they could get that would work with it were these American football numbers that this market had in Mexico City. They were silver. And they got them all ready for the match. And that's what they wore in one of the most historic games of all time. So that color, that dark blue, that shirt has become iconic. That's why Argentina keeps going to that kind of darker shade of blue. It's almost a navy. The only time that Argentina wore a blue alternate kit and lost to England was in that game in 1962. We know who the referee is going to be for Wednesday, and it is a referee that we know very well. The American referee, Ismael Elfaf. He's got the whistle. Fellow Americans, Corey Parker, Kyle Atkins, they are your assistant referees. Elfaf, 44 years old, was born in Morocco. We see him all the time in Major League Soccer. He has already worked Brazil-Norway in this tournament. Pretty comfortable game to manage. Spain and Uruguay, a little more difficult game to manage. Netherlands, Japan, pretty comfortable game as well to manage. He's done a really good job. And I've said it many times. Again, no referee is going to be perfect. And there have been games in MLS that Elfath has frustrated me because I think he's had a bad night. Also, there's so many calls that referees make that we're going to dispute. He's got the best view of all of it. He is the best referee from the United States, maybe ever. And so much of it, and I think it's going to be so important in this match, is how he manages the players. He can be firm. He can be very commanding. He's a big dude. So when he starts yelling at you and has the stern look on his face, he can be intimidating. But he can also be disarming with a smile, with a nod. That's the best kind of referee to me. He can adapt to what the game needs. I think he's very well positioned to have a great day. Hopefully he has his best day and it makes the game even better. Lionel Scaloni, the manager for Argentina, his tone after beating Switzerland in the quarterfinal, where it took 120 minutes and it wasn't a great performance, it was different than his tone after that comeback against Egypt here in Atlanta, which was, I mean, craziness just watching him on the sideline during that game. He was out of his mind. He talked about the performance against Switzerland. He said it was fine, but he said there's room for this team to improve. Now, here's one thing about Scaloni. He's repeated the exact same starting lineup in just four of his 102 matches in charge. So changing the lineup, that's not unusual at all. The conversations about what changes to potentially make here. Fullbacks have been in kind of constant rotation, especially on the right side with Nahuel Molina and Gonzalo Montiel. Rodrigo De Paul hasn't had a great tournament. He's often been a sub in the midfield. Could you see Giuliano Simeone? Could you see Thiago Almada to start in his old home here in Atlanta? Could you see Nicolas Gonzalez? Does Alexis McAllister keep his spot? I think the midfielders, with the way Argentina plays in a 4-2-2-2, your midfield four have a lot of work to do. Leandro Paredes is essential. He's going to play as much as he can possibly play. I think Enzo Fernandez has been good enough to keep his spot. McAllister and DePaul are the question marks. And the other question is, do you keep with the 4-2-2-2 and try to open England up in the middle, centrally? Or do you go back to really the way the team kind of started the tournament, where DePaul was wide to start and Thiago Almada was wide on the opposite side, on the left, cutting in on his right foot, with Messi in more of a 10 role? Do you start with Messi as a right winger, knowing he's going to cut in a good bit with Almada on the left? I think Almada kind of lost his spot due to the veteran leadership of that midfield quartet, the fact that you really wanted to keep the other guys, and while you were getting Paredes fully healthy, once Paredes came in, then Scaloni went with that. But I think you need something to freshen it up. I'm really curious to see if Thiago Almada gets that start. I also want to see, as you have the possibility of playing three center backs with Nicolas Otamendi potentially coming into that. We'll see. There's going to be a lot more talk with Lionel Scaloni speaking to the media tomorrow at 7 o'clock. Thomas Tuchel of England will speak to the media at 6 here in Atlanta. We will have their comments and we'll talk about what they have to say on tomorrow night's AST. But coming up next, we're going to stay with a little bit more of England and Argentina. Some of the numbers to know about this, and some of the noise that is coming up on both sides of the Atlantic. More Atlanta soccer tonight, coming up on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Oh! Golazo, Edgar Vasquez!
Now back to our look at the world of soccer.
And Jason Longshore has it all covered.
This is Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Hour number two, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Semi-final week is upon us. France and Spain tomorrow at 3 o'clock. France is your favorite by a decent margin. I mean, looking at some of the odds that I'm seeing right now, France plus 130, Spain plus 225. Wednesday's game here in Atlanta is about as close to a toss-up as you'll see. England plus 155, Argentina plus 200. Let's stick with Argentina and England, and let's talk a little bit about the English side of it. Jude Bellingham. Jude Bellingham has been a player that has been someone that some people love, some people have questioned, even his manager. Sounds like even him and his manager might need to get back on the same page after the last game. There were some conflicting things being said to the media, not to each other. Jude Bellingham is a very confident guy. He has stepped up in a massive way in this tournament, and especially in the knockout rounds. He became the fifth player in World Cup history to score multiple goals in two straight knockout matches. He had two goals in about 2 minutes in the win over Mexico in Mexico City in the round of 16. He had both goals in the 2-1 win over Norway. The opener and then the extra time winner. The last player to do that, to have multiple goals in two straight knockout matches. It's kind of funny with the opponent on Wednesday, Diego Maradona, 1986. He scored twice in the quarterfinal win over England. He scored twice in the semifinal win over Belgium. 40 years since that's happened, and yes, there is an England-Argentina component to it. I mean, you're going back to 54, 58, 62, the previous times that this has happened. So Jude Bellingham doing this, I mean, this is incredible stuff. Can he almost do the inverted version of what Maradona did and score twice against Argentina? Maradona started his back-to-back with two goals against England. Can Bellingham finish his back-to-back with two goals against Argentina? We'll find out. Obviously, Argentina is the reigning World Cup champion here. So, and England hasn't won the tournament since 66 when they hosted it. Here's the thing about Argentina, though, and what their run has been for quite a while. I mean, they won the World Cup last time. They've been on a great run in the Copa America with back-to-back titles. You go further back in the World Cup. 2018, they went out in the round of 16 to France. Crazy game, 4-3. Absolutely bonkers game. 2014, they got to the final. And that was a weird tournament. That was a weird Argentina team. They never really got going in that tournament. They got to the final, but they were never great. Messi carried them a long way, and I think it's why it got really foolish when there was so much criticism of Messi not being able to win the big one. I mean, that 2014 World Cup, I just remember being astounded by the guy, being able to drag this team that never quite got going all the way to the final. You go further back than that, 2010... Diego Maradona managed it. They got blown out by Germany in the quarterfinals. 2006, they lost to Germany in a penalty shootout. 2002, they didn't even get out of the group stage. 1998, they lost to the Netherlands in the quarterfinals on the great goal from Frank de Boer, sending the long diagonal to Dennis Bergkamp, one of the best goals you'll ever see. 1994, it's a tournament that has become a little bit of a rallying cry for Argentina this summer, because that tournament, Argentina came in with a ton of momentum. Maradona had come back after a suspension and was playing well, and he was kind of the veteran leader in the group, where you had a lot of young talent on the way up. And they looked really good in their group stage games. And then Maradona tested positive for a controlled substance. The story has always been that he was using, as he was getting back in shape in Argentina, he was using a supplement from GNC called Ripped Fuel. And the substance, which is actually true, it was different in Argentina than it was in the US. And his personal trainer ran out of what they had from Argentina once they got to the U.S., and he just went to GNC and bought the U.S. version. Well, it had a substance in it that was on the banned list, and he tested positive. It's also Diego Maradona, so it is entirely possible that there are a million different things that he would have tested positive for, and even though, by all accounts, he had gotten himself clean at that stage. Anyway, that completely derailed Argentina's 94 World Cup. He said FIFA cut him off at the legs. I mean, he tested positive for something. There's really nothing else you can do there. And that was it for Argentina. They went out pretty quickly after that. 1990, Diego Maradona dragged Argentina to the final. That was not a great World Cup all the way around in 1990. Argentina was not very good. It was an aging team. And Diego Maradona had played, I think, 5 years by that point in Serie A, where, and that was after, I think, three seasons playing in Spain, where the defending in Spain was basically assault, legalized. And in Italy, it wasn't much different. He played in that tournament with an ankle that was bigger than most people's calves. It was disgusting to see some of these images. But he kept getting that team to the final. They became extremely hated in Italy when they beat Italy in Naples, where Maradona played. And yes, he goaded the media into telling the fans that he wanted the Italian fans to root against Italy. There's a whole bunch of reasons for that. That will be a whole nother show at some point about the differences between Northern Italy and Southern Italy. We'll save that for another time. That's Argentina's World Cup history after winning in 86. It hasn't been great. They have not beaten a reigning world champion. Small group. There's only eight teams. They have not beaten a reigning world champion in 90 minutes of a World Cup match since 1990. When Argentina beat Brazil in the round of 16. Maradona on one decent ankle, carrying the ball forward, drawing all the defenders, slipping a pass through to Claudio Caniggia. Since then, since 1990, they've had shootout wins. They had the shootout win over Italy in that tournament. They had the shootout win over England in 98. They had the group stage loss to England in 2002. The shootout loss, the painful results against Germany, shootout losses and just losses and extra time losses, all three, 2006, 2010, 2014, the 4-3 loss to France in 2018, and the epic World Cup final win over France, but it was in penalties last time out. 22 World Cup matches against reigning world champions all time for Argentina. 4 wins, 8 draws, 10 losses. All 4 of the 90-minute wins against former World Cup champions were in 86 and 90. Maradona and 4 other players featured in all those matches. Now, here's another element to this. We're covering this from all the different angles. You've got a lot of superstition, Argentina wearing the secondary kits. You've got the fact that none of these players have played against each other in this rivalry. And you've had 21 years of pent-up conversation about it. And the Argentine media is taking note of what the English media is having to say about it. There are a whole lot of former England players who are now pundits. And they have not been shy. They're on a lot of different shows. A lot of different podcasts. So there's a lot of material to work with here. Gary Neville, the legendary fullback for Manchester United and England, he said this is not a vintage Argentina. I would agree with that. He said that they can still be dangerous given Messi, given the squad spirit. Totally agree with that. He very harshly criticized the center back pairing of Cristiano Romero and Lisandro Martinez. They both play in the Premier League. They've both been punching bags for Neville covering the Premier League. He called them the best and worst center back pair in the world at the same time. He talked about how they can give away a goal a game while also going down the other end and scoring a goal a game. That's a little harsh. I think they're both very good center backs. I think the criticisms of them in England are over the top, in my opinion. Joe Cole, legendary, one of the more talented English players of the last 20, 30 years, to be perfectly honest. Like, such a technical player. Loved his game. Had a lot of injuries. Joe Cole was the boldest so far. I'm sure there will be more. He was on the Rest Is Football podcast, and he said England would put Messi to bed, and he predicted that England will beat Argentina. Micah Richards, who's on the show as well, was like trying to get him to dial it back a little bit. No, Joe Cole did not dial it back. He kept doubling down. John Terry, former England captain, he was also doubling down. He said England are better man for man. He said he's not worried about Argentina at all. Ian Wright, he was a little more measured. He said he fears Argentina less than France or Spain. That's totally valid. He talked about some of the weaknesses in the squad. Again, totally valid. We've talked about that here as well. He named France as the team that worries him the most when it comes to England. Yeah, I think France is the best team of the four. Nothing wrong with what Ian Wright said. I think the John Terry and the Joe Cole comments and some of the Gary Neville comments are going to get a lot of play in the Argentine locker room. And this isn't a team that needs a lot of extra motivation. I've made the comparison a lot between Last Dance Michael Jordan and Lionel Messi. We don't see as much of that personality of Messi come out. I've tried to explain it in the times that we've seen Atlanta United play in Miami, and we've talked about Messi, and you don't want to make him angry. You don't need to give him more fuel. I think it was Glenn Rice who was talking about BJ Armstrong gassing Jordan up when Charlotte played Chicago in the playoffs, and he's like, he does not need that. Don't do it. England should probably know that, but Messi will take what he needs to take from this and use it as a slight. And what I will point you to, if you do not know angry Messi, if you don't know what that's like, we've seen it at times in MLS. I don't think we've seen it with Atlanta yet, but we've seen it. Go watch some of the Miami-Orlando games and you've seen it. If you need to understand angry Messi, go watch the Netherlands game back from the last World Cup. Messi felt disrespected by things that Louis van Gaal said before the game, things that the Dutch goalkeeper said before the game. I think there was a couple other players who had a few comments. He felt disrespected to the point that when he scored a goal, he ran over pretty close to being in front of the Dutch bench and taunted them. You don't usually associate that kind of behavior with Lionel Messi. You got that in that game. And that also got the legendary after Wout Weghorst took a couple of cheap shots at Messi during the game. But then afterwards, he wanted to either get an autograph or get a selfie or get his jersey or whatever. And Messi's doing an interview for Argentine TV. And Weghorst is out of the shot, like waiting for him. And Messi starts yelling during the interview, "Que mira bobo? What are you looking at, dummy?" Basically. "Que mira bobo?" And to the point that the Argentine journalist has to be like, "Tranquilo, Leo, tranquilo, calm down." He was that fired up after the game. You don't need to give him anything to get himself worked up. Yeah, he's 39. But man, these comments are not smart. They're getting a little over the top. We'll see what the next 24 hours brings in this regard, because it is going to be interesting between Argentina and England here in Atlanta on Wednesday. Flaco Lopez, the forward who had the assist on Julian Alvarez's game winner against Switzerland, he took a more measured route. He said, "Look, I know what Argentina England is all about." He said that the team will treat it just like any other game. He said they're professionals. They're going to play it like they play every match, fight to the last second. Absolutely the smart things to say publicly. Privately? Nah, they've got all these comments up. They're sitting at the asado and they're passing the phone around. They know what's been said, and it's only going to make them angry. Is that going to be enough? I don't know. We're going to find out on Wednesday. So much to dig into with Argentina, England. We will continue this conversation tomorrow. We'll also continue it really all day tomorrow as both managers will speak to the media after the semifinal between France and Spain. Make sure you're following me, Longshoe. Make sure you're following Soccer Down Here, Madison Cruz 7, OSG Nelson, the whole crew that you've heard throughout the World Cup. We'll be covering all of that all day long to get you ready, and then I'll have it for you on AST tomorrow night at 10. But coming up next, we got to get into some Atlanta United talk. A big signing today. MLS just launched the biggest marketing campaign in history for the league. We'll talk about that on the other side of the break on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
Into the back of the net! Goal!
Back to more of Atlanta Soccer Tonight
with Jason Longshore.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. Live on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app. We got to get into what's on tap. It's brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of FIFA World Cup 26. Atlanta United is on tap Friday night in Nashville. Kickoff will be just after 8 o'clock. Pre-game coverage here on the station will start at 7 with Abe Gordon and Madison Cruz. Mike Conti and I will be in the Music City for the return to Major League Soccer play, and Atlanta will have at least one new player, new center back, Junior Alonso. He is under contract now through the 2028 to 2029 season. Remember, the schedule is going to change. The format, the calendar is going to change next year. So he is under contract, Alonso, through the 28-29 season. Free transfer from Atletico Mineiro. He was with Paraguay during the World Cup, helped them get to the round of 16. They were a very good defensive team. He's primarily a center back. He can play left back. He played left back during the tournament a good bit for Paraguay, but much more defensively minded left back than you might think. He's not going to get forward up the field a ton. Very good on the ball. He will be on the roster once he gets his ITC and his visa clear. So I don't know if he will be ready to go on Friday or not. We'll find out this week. Tata Martino will speak to the media on Thursday before we all head up to Nashville. Chris Henderson talked about the signing in the press release today, talked about how he's a hardworking defender. He's going to add solidity, stability to the back line. He's a leader. He's been a leader in every team that he's been in. A big reason why this move happened, and his agent talked about it on Paraguayan radio, and it's been talked about for a while. There was a lot of talk about him coming to Atlanta back in February and March, and he stayed with Atletico Mineiro through the first part of the season, through the Copa Sudamericana campaign in South America, and through the World Cup. They agreed to let him go on a free, so no transfer fee had to be paid, and he signs a contract with Atlanta. But one of the reasons why, and reportedly there was at least one other MLS team that wanted him, he wanted to come here because of Tata Martino. Tata Martino wanted him specifically. Alonso chose Atlanta over another MLS suitor, also helping that his teammate with the Paraguayan national team, Miguel Almirón, is here. The resume on Junior Alonso, 422 appearances across six countries' top divisions. Paraguay, France, Spain, Argentina, Brazil, and Russia. 9 goals, 15 assists. He's a center back. You're not looking for a ton of those. The bulk of his career was spent in Brazil with Atlético Mineiro. He's known as the Sheriff there. 240 appearances across three different stints from 2020 to 2026. Captained there many times. He's won the Brazilian League there. He won the Copa de Brazil there. He was part of the Atlético Mineiro team that lost to Marcelino Moreno's Lanús in the Copa Sudamericana final last year. Before he was in Brazil, he came up through Cerro Porteño in Asunción in Paraguay. Moved to Lille in 2017 in Ligue 1. Played 52 times there. Took a loan to Celta Vigo in La Liga. Also had a loan to Boca Juniors while he was under contract with Lille. That won the Argentine Supercopa in 2018-19. Won a league title the year after that. He was going to spend a longer period of time at Krasnodar, but this was during COVID times and all of that and the Ukrainian conflict. So that didn't last very long and went back to Mineiro on a permanent deal in 2024. The scouting profile, and we're going to have more on a scouting profile on Junior Alonso over at Soccer Down Here tomorrow. Was able to get some scouting help and some extra resources to tell the story of Junior Alonso. But what stands out when you dig into his play, he is a very good defender on the ball. And how many times have we had this conversation about what Tata Martino wants and what he prioritizes? It is having the ball and doing good things with the ball. And yes, that includes your defenders in the build-up play. Over his last season and a half at Atletico Mineiro, Junior Alonso ranked in the 95th percentile among Brazilian top-flight center backs for pass volume. Pass at a very high accuracy as well. Also, a very good player in terms of reading the game. He's not purely a physical center back. He's composed. He's left-footed, which also helps. That helps the build-up as well. 76 caps for Paraguay since his debut in 2013. 3 goals, 3 assists. He played a role in almost all of Paraguay's World Cup qualifying matches in this past cycle, helping them get to their first World Cup since 2010, and then was ever present during the World Cup this summer. He played left back because of injuries in the squad, even though center back is where you will see him with Atlanta United. But that versatility, there will be times that you will need it. There will be times that you go to a line of five, potentially, and he could be a left-sided center back. You've got an extra center back now to replace Juan Bedercal. So, Enami High, Steon Gregerson, and now Junior Alonso will be either battling it out for 2 starters out of the 3, or all 3 of them will be on the field at times. Mentioned it earlier, Atlanta's back in action Friday, July 17th, on the road at Nashville. It'll be televised on Fox and Apple TV. It'll also be here on the station. You've got now MLS with a big opportunity. This World Cup has been massive for the game in this country. And it's not purely tied to the U.S. men's national team. It's not purely tied to any one team. It's been massive across the board. I mean, think of downtown Atlanta during the Morocco-Haiti game, for example, or the Uzbekistan-DR Congo game. It's not about just the big teams. This has been a special tournament for anybody. Whether you love the game and have loved it for a long period of time, or you're brand new to loving this game. So that creates an opportunity for Major League Soccer, and they are looking to capitalize on it with a league-wide campaign called Thanks World, We'll Take It From Here. Miguel Almiron is featured in this. Lionel Messi, obviously, featured in this. Many other players from around the league are featured in this. Son Heung-min. A lot of the owners of the league who have high profiles, like a David Beckham, like a Magic Johnson, like a Matthew McConaughey, all featured in this. And here locally, Atlanta United has partnered with Ticketmaster and with Papa John's on a new promotion called First Match on Us. That offers a free pair of tickets to new attendees at Mercedes-Benz Stadium who have never been to an Atlanta United game before. The promotion's already concluded due to overwhelming demand. That's really cool. And that's something that a lot of teams are doing around the league. It is an opportunity to piggyback on what's happening with the World Cup and get people to care about their local teams too. Don't expect any league in the world. Don't expect this for any league in the world to match what we've seen with the World Cup in terms of the intensity or in terms of just the overall excitement. A league has a different rhythm. A league has a different feel to it. You're over a longer period of time. It's more of the day-to-day. Every game is not the biggest game. Every World Cup game is the biggest game for every team in it, for as many games as you get. Every game is the game. In a league, it doesn't feel that way. And that's something that we have to recalibrate to. And it's something also, don't overreact to every single individual game. I see some empty seats. Everything's bad for MLS. Don't do that. Don't do this, because what I've seen locally with all of these different fan festivals, all of these different major events, the overall health of the sport in our area is so good right now. everybody has had a chance all summer to experience it and go watch the game together. And what I keep saying to people is feel the game. That's been the biggest difference for me with this World Cup. Every World Cup has gotten bigger, it feels like. Every World Cup has seen the game get bigger. I think back to the first World Cup that I got to see in 86. I fell into it at the end of that tournament. Changed my life. 1990, I experienced the whole tournament. I watched every game that TNT broadcast, even with the commercials at the time. They missed a couple of goals. It happened. Mick Luckhurst on color commentary on that. 1994, it was here in the U.S. I wish I'd had the money to go to games. I didn't. Couldn't travel to any of the games. But 94 changed everything. We got a league out of it. And now we get that day to day. That is so, so important. But 98, 2002, 2000, I mean, I can reel off like games and where I was watching it and what happened when big things happened in the tournament. And every World Cup is like that. And I feel like everyone has gotten bigger. But the difference this year has been the emotion, the passion, the feeling. No, you're not going to get that feeling in every moment of every league match. It builds. It's a slower build. But the feeling of the sport is what's come through. And I hope what happens is people who come to Atlanta United games for the first time get that feeling in a more intimate way, in an up-close way, and getting to see it with players like Jay Fortune, who has grown up in this club, like Cooper Sanchez, who just graduated high school and has grown up in this club. Guys who are coming through this club that have been born and raised in the Atlanta area, like the homegrowns, the kids you can root for. It changes the feeling. It changes the emotion. It's so, so vital. And it's really exciting to see the potential of this. And y'all know I'm a music guy. Like, I love the culture element to it. Amazon Music worked with the league to do a new version of Can I Kick It? A Tribe Called Quest. DJ Premier, you got some new vocals on it. That's going to debut on Fox during these World Cup semifinals. The commercial is out, but there's been a lot of talk about the league not taking advantage of advertising on games. It's a little more complicated than that because of the sponsorship rules around a World Cup and FIFA making sure that they get their money on their sponsorships and what commercials you can show. Fox is going to use these ads and this campaign during their semifinals, and it will lead into the MLS is back kind of weekend that we're going to have with games starting Thursday and an Atlanta playing on Friday, a doubleheader with LAFC playing after Atlanta on Big Fox on Friday night. Also, and I wanted to touch on this one real quick before we go to break, the U.S. Women's National Team, their next World Cup is next year. They got to qualify first. They should out of CONCACAF. But they made a big announcement today. Two huge friendlies in October against the reigning World Cup champions, Spain. October 10th in Washington, D.C. at Audi Field. October 13th at Subaru Park outside of Philadelphia. Emma Hayes has been trying to find a way to get Spain on the schedule for a while. Spain plays a different style. It's really good for the U.S. to get these kind of games right now. Spain just clinched their qualification ahead of the Men's World Cup with a big win over England, big win over Iceland. Spain's the best team in the world right now. The U.S. is trying to get back there again. Huge opportunity for the U.S. Women's National Team. And then also, the U.S. Women's National Team will be based here in Atlanta for the first time ahead of those two games. Training here, going to D.C., playing that match, going to Philadelphia, playing that match. So a big opportunity for the U.S. Women's National Team to get used to their new home in Fayetteville. All right, coming up next, one more segment to go, the 3-4-3. That's how we always close out the show. Little bit of structure. Local, national, international, and three things that make me smile. Coming up next on Atlanta Soccer Tonight on 92.9 The Game and the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has an exclusive bundle for customers 55 and up.
I'm Sarah Bowl.
Yeah, I'm Frank Bowl.
A reliable network is key for us. And with T-Mobile, it's been wonderful. And going to the 55-plus plan saved us so much money.
A lot.
And that's important, trying to keep costs down. The home internet's been perfect. It's fast, it's quick. The setup was so easy, it took less than 15 minutes.
It was like, ta-da! If you want simplicity, coverage, reliability, you want the whole package, T-Mobile has it.
Right now, T-Mobile customers 55 and up can get two phone lines on America's best network, plus America's fastest 5G home internet for just $30 each.
$30 per month each line with auto pay plus taxes and fees. Minimum age 55. Pricing for home internet rely on 2 lines of Essentials Choice 55. $35 connection charge per line required. Best mobile network and fastest 5G home internet based on analysis by Ookla of Speedtest Intelligence data 2H 2025. All rights reserved.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Rolly Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Rolly Romero versus Teofimo Lopez. August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
When it comes to my policy, Farmers gives it to me straight, so there's no surprises.
It's your coverage. You should never be confused.
You hear that? An insurance provider with a conscience.
We're a choir, but yes, we have that too.
Straightforward coverage you can literally understand. That's what you get when
you have Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Learn more at Farmers.com. Underwritten by Farmers Truck or Fire Insurance Exchanges or Affiliate. Products not available in every state.
Here's something you may not know. Only 14% of cancers in the U.S. are caught through routine screenings. Prenuvo's whole body MRI may help close that gap. Screening for over 500 conditions, including most solid tumors, all in under an hour. Prenuvo's body panels also test over 80 biomarkers for a deeper understanding of your health. No radiation, no contrast. Book your scan at prenuvo.com. That's prenuvo.com.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
And now we end the night with a bit of structure.
Shot!
Let's get the formation set. It's the 3-4-3 on Atlanta Soccer Tonight.
Welcome back, Atlanta Soccer Tonight. The 3-4-3. It's brought to you by Ford. Visit your local Ford dealer. Three local stories, four headlines from anywhere in the world, and three things that make me smile to wrap up this very forward-looking AST with the semifinals starting tomorrow at this World Cup. Let's talk about the local side number one. I want to remind you of the big signing Atlanta United made today. It might not be the signing that gets all the headlines around the world, but I think it's an important one for this team going into the final 20 games of this season. You get some veteran leadership in Junior Alonso, the Paraguayan center back. He is under contract through 28-29. He's a natural leader. He anticipates things very well. He reads the game very well, and he is excellent on the ball, and he's left-footed. That is going to help this team on a number of different levels in the way that they play. Tata Martino wanted him. He wanted to play for Tata Martino, and he chose Atlanta over other teams that wanted his services. Excited to see him in the team. We'll find out if he can be in the team as early as Friday night in Nashville. Number two, on the local side of the headlines, Atlanta United 2. They closed out their homestand in Athens at the University of Georgia with a big 4-1 win on Saturday night. They've been really good over in Athens. Unbeaten in regulation over the last few games there. Two wins and a penalty shootout loss. The 4-1 win over Miami, Arif Kovac. He was involved in three of Atlanta's four goals. And I'm really curious to see if he starts pushing into a first-team conversation. Because this has not been just a momentary little run of form. He's been huge as of late. 15 goal contributions on the season. Jose Silva told our own John Nelson that Kovac is in a flow state right now. First off, Jose Silva talking about a flow state blows my mind. Second, Arif Kovac is in a flow state. It's absolutely the proper usage of it. Talking about how he's And I think what I've seen him add to his game is his connections with the other players in the team. When I first saw Kovach last year, you see the size and you see how good his feet are for his size, and he's a great finisher. But this year, and especially over this last 6 to 8 weeks, it's been the combinations and it's been the ability to connect with his teammates. He's not just a goal scorer. He can be a goal contributor. Daniel Chica, who has been playing very well for Atlanta United too, he opened the scoring in the 20th minute. Mo Cisse with a through ball to Cameron Dunbar. Dunbar, who's also been playing very well and scored against Sporting Kansas City last week. Dunbar squared it to Kovach. Kovach with a little back heel flick for Chica. First time finish. Great goal to open the scoring. Ignacio Suarez Corey, one of these talented academy products. He scored his first goal of the season in the 51st minute. Great goal from Suarez Corey. It was set up by Enzo Dovolo, came on at halftime. 2 minutes later, 3-0, Andrew Jardines deflected one in off of Tyler Hall. An own goal. Jardines is one of the stories right now for Atlanta United too. The fourth goal came in the 62nd minute. So 3 goals in 11 minutes. Suarez Corey played a long ball down to Dovolo down the right, botched clearance. That sent Marine, the goalkeeper for Miami, out of position. Dovolo squared it to Kovach. Simple finish. Dovolo, 2 assists, his first 2 of his pro career. Really like Enzo Dovolo. He developed at Strasbourg before coming over to the States to play at UNC Greensboro. Dovolo's got something about him. I want to see him this whole entire season with Atlanta United 2 playing a lot to see what he can turn into. Is he an MLS level guy? He's close. I want to see more from Dovolo. Miami got a goal late. It didn't really matter. Atlanta had 23 shots on the night. Really good performance. They are up to 9 wins now, 5 losses, 3 draws. 6th in the East. They are just 4 points off of the conference lead. The Twos will be back in action on Saturday night in Huntsville City. John Nelson will have the radio call for you on soccer down here. You can also watch it on YouTube and on the One Football app. All right, number 3 on the local side, a documentary that if you get a chance to go to tomorrow night, highly recommended, on Clyde Best. It's called Transforming the Beautiful Game, the Clyde Best Story. It was tonight, and it's also going to be tomorrow night at the Loudermilk Conference Center downtown. It's part of the Bronze Lens Film Festival, presented alongside Soccer in the Streets. Clyde Best appears in person for a post-film panel both nights, and there's some giveaways, including a trip to his native Bermuda. You can get tickets at clydebest.shop. So Best, from Bermuda, joined West Ham United at 17 years old. He was one of the first black players to establish himself in the English First Division at that time. 218 appearances, 58 goals between 1969 and 1976. And he faced regular racial abuse from the stands along the way. Spring of 1972, he started alongside Clive Charles, who came to the States and was a very influential coach in the U.S. soccer programs and in the NASL, the MISL, MLS. He also started alongside Charles and Adi Coker. West Ham was the first division team in 1972 to field 3 black players in the same starting 11. Best came to the North American Soccer League. He played in Tampa Bay, won Soccer Bowl 75, played for the Portland Timbers as well. The film is a great documentary about his life, what he went through, but also the idea that he always had about not just playing for himself, but playing for the generations that come after him. In the film, you'll also hear from Harry Redknapp. You'll hear from Ian Wright. You'll hear from Casey Keller. Great documentary. Highly recommended. If you are free tomorrow night after you watch France and Spain, of course, make your way over to the Loudermilk Conference Center downtown for this film. 7:30. It's part of the Bronze Lens Film Festival. 4 headlines from around the world. Number 1, there is some reports coming out of D.C. that is very, very interesting. D.C. Council Chair pitches a $620 million Audi Field roof and expansion. Nearly half of that, they're trying to find the money for it, would come from the District of Columbia. This would be big because the stadium, we go there a lot. they really didn't do a great job in building it. It felt like they did it on the cheap. It's interesting. The broadcast situation is very interesting. If you've ever heard one of our games from Audi Field, we're usually not very shy about talking about it. It's not necessarily the best views. Last time we actually did have a real broadcast booth, which was pretty good. But it needs some work. And what it would do, this plan that has been brought forward would bring at least 8,000 more seats. It'd bring the total up to 28,000 seats and a lot of amenities because it feels like it's kind of pedestrian. So it'd be a really smart move. And what's been interesting about Audi Field is it's been used by quite a few different organizations. I mean, U.S. Soccer's played games there. The Washington Spirit and the NWSL do very well there. DC United, when they are good, they draw very well. Also, spring football games have been played there. All kinds of events at Audi Field. So it needs some work. This would be a great thing for soccer in that area. And honestly, it'd be a great thing for soccer in the country to have a better venue in the DC area. Number two, some coaching moves from around the world. Uruguay, they are in advanced talks to bring in Diego Forlan, the Golden Ball winner at the 2010 World Cup, as their interim manager with the potential of making it full-time after Marcelo Bielsa left when his contract ended at the end of Uruguay's group stage where they didn't make it to the knockout round. Croatia, they have gone back to Slaven Bilic. He previously was the Croatian national team manager from 2006 to 2012. He will succeed at Zlatko Dalic, who had a great run with the Croatian national team, but it had kind of run its course. Also, according to Gazzetta dello Sport in Italy, Andrea Pirlo is emerging as the main candidate for the Italy job. Paolo Maldini, the legend, was installed as the Federation's new technical director, a very good hire. That's alongside advisor Leonardo. They're trying to get the band back together, bringing their former Milan teammate in, Pirlo, to be part of Italy's Nations League campaign, which will start in September. You know, Italy hasn't been to the last three World Cups. They've got to do something. Will Pirlo be the guy? We'll find out. He's currently coaching in Dubai with United FC. He did manage Juventus. He won the Coppa Italia. He's also been in Turkey, had a brief run at Sampdoria as well. Number three on the headlines. I've talked about it a lot during this tournament, and I don't think anything that happened in the knockout round changes it. This was a huge World Cup for Africa. African nations combined to get 9 of 10 teams into the knockout round, and they also combined to earn more than $153 million in prize money from this expanded format. Morocco earned the most because they got the furthest, $31.5 million for reaching the quarterfinals. Egypt got a little bit less than that for doing the same. Seven other nations, including Senegal, Ghana, Cabo Verde, each collected $13.5 million for reaching the round of 32. A lot of that money ends up going into development at the federation level, into opportunities for young players at the federation level. So this could be transformational for some of these programs. Number four, some transfer roundup as we're getting into that stage, as the major leagues in Europe are going to be back underway in about 4 weeks. Aston Villa, they are finalizing a move for Freiburg midfielder Johan Manzambi, who has been great for Switzerland in this World Cup. He was injured and didn't play against Argentina. Looked like he was going to go to Newcastle, but Aston Villa has stepped up in their pursuit. Amadou Onana got hurt earlier in the tournament for Belgium, and Villa needs a replacement. Manzambi could be that guy. And you even saw after the game, Dibu Martinez for Argentina, the goalkeeper for Aston Villa, was having a very long conversation with Manzambi. So maybe doing a little bit of recruiting. Leonardo Trossard, he is moving from Arsenal to Besiktas, deal reportedly worth around 20 million euros. Manchester United, they're finalizing a deal for Youri Tielemans from Aston Villa for £35 million. That's his release clause. And on the women's side, Spain defender Mapi León, she has signed a contract with the London City Lionesses, reuniting her with one of the best players in the world, Alexia Putellas. Barcelona's women's team had a bunch of players out of contract, and two of their most important ones, León and Putellas, are going to the London City Lionesses, owned by Michelle Kang. The only team in the English Women's Super League that doesn't have a men's team attached to it. They are independent, and really building something big. They didn't have a great first season in the WSL, but when you add Puteas, you add León, they are going to be a handful. All right, three stories to end the night with some smiles. Let's start with number one, Erling Haaland. If you did not really know him before this World Cup, he got a lot of people's attention with being kind of silly on social media and wearing cowboy hats and cowboy boots. He continued the silliness, getting off the plane as they went back to Norway and they had a huge parade. He got off the plane carrying a taxidermy raccoon. Okay. Maybe he picked that up in Texas, I guess, because there was a real big feature on him going into one of the Western shops in Dallas and buying a shirt that is now super popular in Norway and buying cowboy boots and a cowboy hat and learning all that. Maybe he got the raccoon there. I don't know. Number two on things that make me smile, a restaurant in Argentina is running a budget deal that comes with a small voodoo doll dressed in a France jersey. I mean, you got to get to actually play France. I guess maybe they did it before the tournament, and that's who they beat in the final last time. I don't know. Maybe they're just super confident. I don't know. The superstitions in Argentina are fascinating, and if you haven't seen It was a series that you can find on YouTube about how Argentina experienced the last World Cup. It was so interesting to watch, and one of the parts of it that was so crazy was the voodoo and witches that were involved in this and their whole processes. Copa 90, go watch that if you get a chance on YouTube ahead of the Argentina match. And number three, I mean, I mentioned it earlier, just the fact that MLS is pulling out a Tribe Called Quest, Can I Kick It, with a new version of it for this new campaign that we will see if it is a watershed moment for Major League Soccer after this World Cup. It's a watershed moment for this World Cup as we go into the semifinals tomorrow. Spain and France tomorrow at 3 o'clock. We'll be talking about it on AST tomorrow night. I'm back with you at 10. Enjoy the match. Enjoy the rest of your night. Adios, everybody.
T-Mobile has an exclusive bundle for customers 55 and up.
I'm Sarah Bowl.
Yeah, I'm Frank Bowl.
A reliable network is key for us. And with T-Mobile, it's been wonderful. And going to the 55-plus plan saved us so much money.
A lot.
And that's important. Trying to keep costs down. The home internet's been perfect. It's fast. It's quick. The setup was so easy. It took less than 15 minutes.
It was like, ta-da!
If you want simplicity, coverage, reliability, you want the whole package, T-Mobile has it.
Right now, T-Mobile customers 55 and up can get two phone lines on America's best network, plus America's fastest 5G home internet for just $30 each.
$30 per month each line with auto pay plus taxes and fees. Minimum age 55. Pricing for home internet reliant 2 lines of Essentials Choice 55. $35 connection charge per line required. Best mobile network and fastest 5G home internet based on analysis by Ookla Speed Test Intelligence Data 2H 2025. All rights reserved.
Las Vegas was built for stars. And on August 22nd, two of boxing's biggest take center stage. Raleigh Romero never follows the script.
This is my game.
Teofimo Lopez has never needed one.
This guy's got a big mouth.
For years, they've had plenty to say.
All you do is talk.
But with world championship gold on the line, can they back it?
Teo, I'm here. I'm going all in.
It's time to put up or shut up. Raleigh Romero versus Teofimo Lopez, August 22nd.
I'll shut you up.
Watch on DAZN and DAZN on Prime Video.
Girl, let's get real. Some pads are just diapers with a good PR team, but not the new Kotex BioCare. That's because Kotex BioCare helps defend against odor and irritants. And it's the first and only pad with this pH proactive system that helps optimize the pad's pH. Just think of it as self-care for down there. Check out Kotex.com for more details on the all-new Kotex, completely redesigned to meet your needs. You asked, we heard.
Amazon Music has everything you want to listen to. Music, podcasts, and now audiobooks. All in one app. Amazon Music Unlimited. Audiobooks included.
Hey, y'all, I'm Maddie.
And I'm Poodle.
And together, we host the podcast Reality Gaze.
We are two ridiculous homosexuals who love nothing more than talking about reality television
and tearing in a new one. So whether it's 90 Day Fiancé, Love is Blind, Love After Lockup, or any other trash TV show about lonely hearts looking for love, your gay besties got you covered, y'all.
New shows every week. Follow and listen to Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcast. Reality
Gaze, let's love.